Now, we had a short discussion yesterday about Hong Kong and what is going on there. And I thought we'd get someone in who knows a little bit about it. His name is Martin van Staden, and he's from the Free Market Foundation, also recent author of a book, Constitution, The Constitution and the Rule of Law. Martin, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Benji.
We really appreciate it. Martin posts a lot about Hong Kong on his Facebook, and he's connected with some of the activists, I believe. So, Martin, what is like the big idea behind China and Hong Kong at the moment?
So look, the protests came about in response to some an extradition law. I think many of the listeners already know this. So basically, someone who's from Hong Kong killed someone in Taiwan. They fled back to Hong Kong, and then Taiwan wanted an extradition. Hong Kong didn't have an agreement with them, and then China, the People's Republic of China, seized upon this as an opportunity to push for an extradition law. Now, people in Hong Kong objected to this not because there is a principled problem of extradition. Of course not. The problem is that China is using this as, or it's seen at least, allegedly, as a way to target Chinese dissidents who may pass through Hong Kong. So many Taiwanese find themselves in Hong Kong very often, and Hong Kongers themselves who are formerly Chinese citizens also have more freedom in Hong Kong to criticize the policy of the Chinese government. Now, with this extradition agreement, China will be able to grab those people and take them to Chinese courts. And the problem is that Chinese courts are not independent, not impartial, and China does not have a good relationship with freedom of speech. Now, the relationship between Hong Kong and China is quite complicated. So in 1984, there was a joint declaration between Britain, which Hong Kong used to be a colony, and China, that Hong Kong would be handed over to China in 1997, I believe. And the agreement was quite clear. It said that the institutions of Hong Kong, including its economic, social, and political institutions, its autonomy, will be maintained at least until the year 2047. Now, the moment Hong Kong was formally handed over to China, this started to change. Early attempts by Hong Kongers to expand their democratic institutions were vetoed by China, and to this day, almost half or about half of Hong Kong's legislature is appointed by pro-Beijing, pro-Chinese groups. They're not elected, and even the chief executive of Hong Kong, their head of government, is appointed by the Chinese government. So while this, the flashpoint for this, these protests was the extradition treaty, there is definitely something deeper here. That is China's constant erosion of Hong Kong's institutions over the last few years. And I think Hong Kongers are pretty much sick of that at this stage. Especially if you look at China as a communist state, Hong Kong is the literally the freest economy in the world. And when you talk about free markets, that is Hong Kong. So I think the people of Hong Kong are a bit concerned, not specifically about the treaty, which has now been withdrawn, but about the precedent that it could set for future Chinese conduct.
So when you say the treaty, this is the extradition treaty issue has now been taken off the table by China.
Yes. So it was proposed by the pro-China Hong Kong government. It switches between pro-China and anti-China governments every now and then. The current one is pro-China. Carrie Lam, the chief executive of Hong Kong, has retracted the bill, and it's pretty much, it seems to have gone away now, but the protests obviously are ongoing as we speak, and I think that indicates that there's a far deeper issue here. It's not just about the extradition bill, but about China's constant meddling in Hong Kong's affairs.
Yeah, and that is quite interesting because, you know, China is starting to be seen in some instances as being a serious threat to freedom, the kind of freedoms we enjoy even in South Africa, mm-hmm. not just to Chinese people, which obviously there are some concerns around that, but even around the world, as China becomes a bigger and more powerful player, mm-hmm. that it starts to export its systems to mm-hmm. groups and actors that are not necessarily connected with it.
Mm. Yeah, so the interesting thing is China used to be an extremely poor state until about, I think, the 1980s when it got very rich. And the reason for this is, and I don't think many people appreciate this, is that China looked at Hong Kong. They saw that a free market works. It raises people out of poverty. And that's what China did with its special economic zone. So all around its coast, there are these special economic zones, basically the freest markets in the world, on par with Hong Kong. So they took the Hong Kong model, and it's total economic freedom. China did not take the message when it came to political freedom, social freedom. There's still a lot of suppression, and a lot of these ideas are finding their way out of China. The latest very nefarious ideas, the social credit system, you're recorded around the clock by government. If you do things that are deemed socially desirable, you gain points. If you do things that are not socially desirable, you lose points, and that may mean that your child cannot go to university, you cannot immigrate, you cannot leave, you cannot travel. So very controlling society, even though when it comes to economics, it's getting very open. So a lot of people were hoping, and theory economists were saying, the economic freedom that China has adopted will lead to political freedom. That has not happened, and it seems to be going in the other direction. So a lot of people have reason to be concerned, especially because China is, in Africa specifically, exercising more and more influence. A lot of African governments seem to be taking their cue from China. So yes, there is reason to be concerned about that.
I mean, this seems to be a problem around the world at the moment, is that you get people who have figured out that the free market is a good way to run the economy, but are not taking the political freedom aspect. And that used to be something that worked in lockstep and now seems to have been decoupled in general.
Yeah, look, it's to us free marketeers, it's quite an unfortunate state of affairs, because we see this in Rwanda, a booming economy right now. They're growing at exponential rates. But you cannot insult President Kagame. You cannot write a bad article about the government. In Singapore, most infamously, the second freest economy in the world, you're not allowed to chew gum. And there also you have a very precarious relationship with freedom of speech. So it seems to have, it's not the case anymore, or if it ever was, it's definitely not anymore the case that if you adopt the free market, that people will insist on having political freedoms, economic freedom, social freedoms respected. Now, Franz Cournier makes a good argument around this, I think, and that is that in some instances, the political capital needed to pursue free market reforms seems to come on the back of dictatorship. So if it's a free and open democracy, then Paul Kagame, for example, cannot pursue free market reforms because his opposition will be elected into power and they will start implementing more a bigger state in economics. But that's not good, I would say. I think democracy and a free economy are obviously very complementary. But let's hope that this doesn't catch on, that free marketeers in politics around the world tell themselves, hey, Augusto Pinochet seems like a good idea right now. Let's do the economic freedom and not the political and social freedom. That's a bad precedent. So we need to really find a way to say economic freedom is great. It's imperative. But social freedom, political freedom are just as important to the free development of the individual.
And in some ways, it's kind of the opposite of what's happening in South Africa. In South Africa, we actually have very, very many social and political freedoms, more than certainly anyone else in the continent, large chunks of South America, Asia. But we're really battling on the economic side of things. And that seems to be going in the opposite direction, unlike China and that sort of thing.
Yes, we're extremely privileged as far as our constitution goes about freedoms, homosexuality, freedom of speech, almost absolute. We've had quite a few substantial hiccups over the last few days, actually. When it comes to economics, there's been a slow encroachment of government more and more on the economic affairs of the people. So right after, let's get this out of the way. Apartheid was not a capitalist or economically free system. I think we ranked in the fourth quartile or third quartile of the economic freedom index during the last years of apartheid. But when we got out of apartheid, the ANC government freed the market very substantially, and we had great economic growth. I think 5% and up. But then at some point during the Mbeki era, there became a far more activist state in economic affairs. And with that, our unemployment rate has skyrocketed as the restrictive labor laws have become more strictly enforced, as more regulations have been passed. Our poverty has increased. But on the social and political freedom front, we're doing great. And our message to government, at least from the Free Market Foundation side, is keep the social freedom. Everything you're doing on social freedom, that you're planning, it seems bad, don't do that, but you're doing great on social freedom. Expand the economic freedom, follow the example of Hong Kong, and even follow the example of China and its special economic zones. Your big friend China, follow their example, but do it right, and then leave people to follow their own economic desires and aspirations without the paternalistic and condescending heavy hand of government guiding them along.
Absolutely, very interesting. And you should check out the Free Market Foundation's website if you want to see some of the things that they are saying. And you'll find that they engage in a lot of the debates that we cover on the show here today. Just in general, Martin van Staden, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks, Benji.